Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Every time we have the Restaurant Opportunity Center of New York on the show, we're talking about workplace abuse and code violations and discriminatory hiring practices and rats and depressing stuff that makes you never want to eat out again. Although if you order in, they also deal with abuses in that area also. Well, not today, dear listeners. Here now with some positive news is Reka Iani Rodriguez, co-director of ROC, the Restaurant Opportunity Center of New York. Reka, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
And what is the good news?
The good news is that we're not only about fighting, bad restaurants and, you know, ones that have rats and everything like that, but we also want to be able to lift up those restaurants that are doing the right thing and do have good working conditions. And so we have done that. And we just released a diner's guide so consumers know where to go out to eat and how to patronize good restaurants.
So hundreds of choices, huh?
There's hundreds of choices in the city, absolutely.
But on your list, there are only seven good ones.
I'm sorry. On the list, there's only good ones. On their list, there's only good ones.
But how many restaurants are on the list?
Well, what we decided to do, we've convened at least about 50 different restaurants that we consider to be doing the high road. So that might mean they're doing everything from having, you know, good workplace practices, which I can define, but also doing things like providing job training for their workers or, you know, making efforts towards having, you know, employee manuals for their workers, doing all the good basic practices to protect the conditions of their employees.
And do you hope, and that phrase you use, that is how you're branding this, high road restaurants.
That's right, exactly.
And so do you hope that one day, you know, high road restaurants is up there with the same kind of diner who will demand free fair trade coffee and free range chicken will demand high road restaurants?
Yeah, that's a good question, because one thing that we see going on is that there's a lot of restaurants out there that just take the low road opposite of high road, obviously. These are restaurants that are cutting corners. They think that if they, you know, cut a corner here in the short term, they'll save, sure. But in the long term, they experience high turnover. They experience lawsuits. They experience, you know, just not a happy staff, and that has consequences. But there's also a lot of restaurants that are starting to, you know, to come out and having to do with a lot of consumer demand around organic and sustainable and green and locally sourcing and all that stuff. And while we say that's great and that's wonderful, obviously there's a consumer demand for it and it's important to be able to source locally and organically. You have to be able to consider how the workers are treated within this equation. And a lot of these restaurants don't do that, and they really don't prioritize labor and working conditions within this, you know, within their marketing of being a, let's say, green or fair trade restaurants, and consumers get it confused.
Right. Right now, I'm looking at your guide. I only see seven restaurants listed right now. Is that not...
Exactly.
Okay.
The reason why there's only seven, like I said, we've convened about 50 restaurants, but each year for Restaurant Week, we're only going to award. We provided an exceptional workplace award just to seven restaurants for now, because these seven restaurants did something very different. They agreed to sign on to a joint code of conduct, which includes everything from a commitment, obviously, to providing, you know, to complying with the law, that's one thing, but doing other really outstanding workplace practices that a lot of restaurants won't even, you know, consider doing. And that not only includes fair wages, and not only includes, you know, providing paid sick days or providing, you know, health insurance for the workers, but also more basic things like I mentioned, posting promotions up within the restaurant so that workers can move up within the workplace. Or, you know, having a grievance process where workers can actually voice their opinions or voice their grievances in a very systematic way. Or having training, whether it's training in-house or, you know, paying for workers to get training outside so that they could move up in the industry. These are all really specific and really outstanding practices that a lot of restaurants don't comply with.
One of the reasons that restaurant workers are abused is because frequently they're undocumented immigrants and they don't feel they have legal protection. Does the high road designation mean that all the employees are documented, or just that they're being treated fairly?
It means that everybody's treated fairly. It's a recognition that everybody, you know, is supposed to be. You know, the employer knows that they're supposed to comply with the law regardless of who the worker is or is not. So it's that recognition. It's these employers who really don't use, you know, whether or not they employ undocumented workers, I don't know. That's not the question. The question is they don't exploit workers and use excuses to be able to exploit them.
And since there are only seven, I think I'd list them now. Crema, which is a Mexican restaurant,
right,
on 17th Street. Mm-hmm. One If By Land, Two If By Sea, which is a pretty famous restaurant. La Chicas Locas, which is in Chelsea, I think. La Palapa, another Mexican restaurant. This one's on St. Mark's Place. Raw Soul. Where's that one?
That Raw Soul's up in Harlem.
Up in Harlem, 145th mm-hmm. Street. And in Brooklyn, you have K-Dog. And the last one is Colors, which is the former workers of Windows on the World. Of course, that would be on the list.
That's right.
That's you guys, isn't it?
Exactly. This is the restaurant that we helped to found. And, you know, this restaurant's obviously different than a lot of other restaurants. But the point of this restaurant is completely democratic decision-making and really good wages to start with. Now, there's only these seven restaurants, but the idea is that each week for Restaurant Week, new restaurants will be awarded and added on, and the guide will continually be updated as well. Again, this is just in response to consumer demand. Consumers have said to us, listen, I know where not to eat. I know where Rock has said, you know, don't go there, don't eat there.
Right.
But where can I go that actually is a good, you know, are good restaurants that I could feel good about? So we said, you know what? We have to be able to start with some examples, and over time, the idea is that more and more and more will come so that really people can have a very wide selection of places to choose from that we all feel good about.
Do you expect that there are many, many restaurants that right now, if they want into the program, could say, look at us and certify us, and they're doing everything up to snuff as you define it right now? Or will most restaurants be, at best, you know, 90% of the way there and have to tweak to get the designation?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that most restaurants are, you know, 100%. I certainly don't think that. But one thing I do think is that some of these things are very basic things. Sure, maybe not every restaurant can provide health insurance for the workers now. But let's say the city's trying to pass, you know, a paid sick days law, or the city's trying to come up with a health insurance fund for restaurant workers, or whatever it might be. It's these restaurants that show support, and they understand that if they do have good practices like this, or if they invest in good practices like this, that ultimately they're going to win in the end. And understanding that it's really unfair for some of these restaurants who are doing the right thing and are trying to make efforts towards doing the right things. And it's unfair competition when other restaurants just keep taking the low road and, you know, not investing in workers and cutting corners and you know, making money by doing so.
Well, so far we've been talking about the carrot soup. Let's talk about the stick or the chicken skewer. You won a multi-million-dollar settlement against the Fireman Hospitality Group.
That's right.
How'd you accomplish that?
That was a combination of a lot of different things. I mean, there were over 250 workers from six different restaurants. And it's the same thing, you know, that we hear going on in hundreds of different restaurants in the city. Workers are not being, you know, their tips are being misallocated, that, you know, there's sexual harassment, there's discrimination, there's a whole array of things. There's just real verbal abuse and so on. And what we did in this situation is we said, okay, we got 250 workers together who over time, it was a long battle, but over time they said, we're not going to stand for this. It was a combination of protests and press and, you know, a lawsuit. And in the end, you know, the employer finally understood that this wasn't going anywhere and that he had to be able to change his workplace practices. And one thing we always say is it's not just about the money. The money's important. You obviously want to be able to recover money for workers. But even more importantly, you have to be able to make changes within the workplace. And that's what happened in this situation.
Did you target Shelley Fireman's restaurants not just because they were violating these best practices, but because there are many of them? He has deeper pockets than maybe a person who just owns one restaurant and feels he has to cut corners just to make a profit?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We had never even heard of Shelley Fireman before this. We have never even heard of his restaurant and his restaurant groups. It was only when workers started coming forward that we understood there was a lot of different restaurants. And for us, it's not even about deep pockets. It's about who's really influential? Who do other restaurants look at for an example? And if we have a big restaurant model out there who's just really setting bad precedent for all other restaurants out there, that's somebody who we would say, you know, it makes sense for workers to be very public about what's going on in this workplace. So, but we had never even heard of him before that.
You know, As I think about all the things we've discussed this hour, things like disclosure in the CIA and the public advocate and what you're doing, the theme of the hour seems to be the power of shaming. What about that? I mean, I know groups like PETA will use a celebrity to say there are bad practices here or I'll never wear fur. There are so many celebrity chefs and, you know, celebrity restaurant owners. Have you thought of working with them to kind of call out their the restaurants that aren't up to snuff?
You know, I just back to your first point about shaming. I mean, it's very, very important to be able to confront a restaurant when they're doing the wrong thing. But I don't think our mission or our idea is ever to just go out there. For example, a worker come to us and the next day we go to the press and say this restaurant's doing this and make it a big publicity stunt.
Right.
We always want to be able to confront the restaurant, you know, more quietly and say, will you try to change these practices? Will you sit down and talk about it so it doesn't have to turn into this? And whether or not the restaurant does that is a different story.
Has your power of persuasion increased since your $3.9 million settlement against the fireman group?
I mean, I would hope so. I definitely would hope so. The situation hasn't arisen, you know, exactly right now, but I would hope that restaurants are paying attention. And I've noticed over the years, more and more, they are paying attention. Whereas one time we might just seem like this little, you know, radical restaurant worker group. I hope in time people see that it's not just about, you know, shaming or being radical or calling out, you know, bad restaurant practices, although we certainly will continue to do that. It's important to do that. But that, you know, we think of a lot of other creative ways in order to meet our mission, which is to improve working conditions. And this being one of them, you know, holding up good employers.
All right. We do have a link to the guide, which you can download from our website, WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. And we've been talking to Reka Iani Rodriguez of the Restaurant Opportunity Center of New York. Reka, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Will you be eating out or dining in tonight?
I'm probably going to dine in, but I hope people look for the sticker and the plaque of these restaurants who were awarded and certainly look at the guide when deciding where to dine out.
All right. Thanks very much. I am Mike Pesca on WNYC and for Brian Lehrer.